So, welcome to another episode of Golden Grenades. Slightly different one this time because Will and I are on location again.
This is live, coming from
Global Bird Fair. It's the first time we've done the podcast live, so who knows what's going to happen.
No cussing.
No cussing, nothing too controversial, although we have realised that we are doing this 2 weeks to the day at exactly the same time. And the Saturday afternoon slot is kneecap at Glastonbury, so that
gives us a controversial edge, I think.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll stay on the right side of the law. So, yeah, who knows? We're just going to kind of wing it, really. So, let's get down to it. Hello. And welcome to Golden Grenades live from Bird Fair. Golden Grenades is, unsurprisingly given our location, a podcast about birds and the people who revere them, set firmly against the uplifting and heartwarming backdrop of the inevitable impending environmental Armageddon. My name is Kit, and joining me today is my partner in crime in all things golden and indeed grenadesy, Will Rose. Hey, Will.
Good afternoon.
How's your Bird Fair going so far?
It's good. I've met a lot of nice people already. We've been having a little wander around, haven't we?
Yeah.
I've seen a Lucy Lapwing.
Yeah.
I've seen a...
I saw Megan McCubbin.
Did you?
Yeah.
Blimey, yeah. And yeah, no, so far so good. It's very hot, but we're doing all right, right?
Excellent. So last year we shared a two-man tent and just before bed you pulled out a tinfoil-wrapped carrot. Have you any surprises in store for me this year?
Well, as you know, that's for my digestion, and there's nothing lewd about that at all. I've forgotten my carrots, so I think you're safe tonight.
Good. So they do call Bird Fair the Glastonbury for birders, and we, it turns out, are in the Saturday afternoon kneecap slot.
Woo!
And just like kneecap at Glasto, we've absolutely packed out this tent. They've closed it down. Nobody else can get in, Will.
I'm just looking, and I can't see the end of the crowd. It is humongous.
It's absolutely massive,
so
yeah.
So thanks for coming.
all these thousands of people.
there's a lapwing at the back.
We've got Henry down the front.
Yeah, yeah.
So what have you been up to lately, Will?
Well, thanks for asking, Kit. I've been doing my animation stuff as usual, but I did have a cool thing. I was on Springwatch this year, so I did an animated mindful moment, so that was super cool.
Excellent.
Getting to animate like pied flycatchers as well as seeing them is double cool. And also, I went out with the lovely Jack Baddams and we found a ring ouzel, so I was very excited about that. Because that's only my second one, like, ever.
Ever. And the first one, I think, we captured live on a podcast.
On this very podcast in up north in Northumberland. And that was good. That was good.
Excellent. And tell us briefly about the fact that you've entered the world of the summer banger.
Oh, yeah. Just a side note, we may edit this in, but I seem to have created a turn-based pop banger, sort of Charlie XCX-style vocoder. Just hold on to your hats. It's coming to you this summer.
It is excellent.
Let's turn back to the podcast.
So enough of this tomfoolery. Let's get down to business. Our very special guest today is conservationist and wildlife guide, an RSPB volunteer and ambassador, butterfly conservation ambassador, and a man who was 50% of a team walking from Land's End to John O'Groats for marine conservation last year. Welcome to all-round general nature nerd, Indy Green.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hi, Indy.
Very excited to be here.
How are you?
I'm very good. I'm quite warm. We did a long run this morning. On your kneecap theme, we did a long run raising money for medical aid for Palestine this morning.
Fantastic.
And it was it's boiling here, but I can't really complain too much. But it was very fun. Thank you for having me.
How long did it take you?
It was 1 hour 12, which I was very pleased with considering how hot it was.
Yeah.
Literally just like melting into a puddle about halfway through.
Wow.
So, no, very, very lucky to be sat here.
That's amazing.
Well, I've heard that the sponsorship is going to remain open. I've sponsored, I believe you have.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I think you're over £2,000 so far.
Is that true?
Nice.
That's my first time hearing that, so nice.
Excellent.
That's very good news.
Good effort. Mm-hmm. And all, I believe, for medical aid in Palestine. Fantastic. So, tell us about last year. Last year you did this crazy walk from... the length of Britain, really, didn't you? You and Katie Monk, he's fishing a wasp out of his beer. Live telly, folks.
Telly?
Live podcasting, folks. you did this crazy walk, John O'Groats to Land's End. or vice versa, and raised a whole load of money again, over £21,000, I believe.
Yeah, Hebridean Whale and Dolphin Trust. Yeah, so we started, myself and Katie, we started 10th of May, finished on the 24th of August. So it was 107 days altogether. And yeah, and a ridiculous sum. It was so, we raised, I think, £6,000 on the last day. It was just like, we started the last day at 1:30 in the morning because it was warm and we needed to finish at the post at John O'Groats at midday. And yeah, put down the tent and just went. And it was one of those beautiful mornings where there was like not a cloud in the sky. It's like the dawn just chased that darkness away, just moving west. It was so cool. And yeah, setting the tent up the other day here at Bird Fair was the first time I set it up since the last day of the walk.
Wow, yeah.
So
really?
That was very nostalgic, just shaking the tent up. And I was like, whoa.
How did it smell?
Pretty bad. But it's coped amazingly. It no damage or anything at all after an intense amount of use. So yeah. But no, it was an amazing summer.
Was it full of dead ticks? Savaged.
Oh, did we get savaged. I remember the highlight of that walk was seeing Katie scraping ticks into a phone case with her debit card. Sorry to anyone who's drinking or eating. But literally, we had like a couple of like millimeters of ticks like in her phone case that we were just shoveling out. It was
minging.
Yeah, you can never really have a worse day after that, so every day's good now.
The best day, because you did like a little video blog, didn't you, as you went, you know, recording things on most days. But my favourite moment was when, I can't remember exactly where you were in Scotland, you might remember, but you'd stopped for lunch and you'd seen a golden eagle and you were so incredulous about the fact that you'd spotted a golden eagle at lunch.
That was in, I remember, you know, that day was really funny because it was in Moffat. It was the day we'd found out last year's election results in the morning. We didn't have any signal at the campsite overnight, so when we woke up and we didn't know that was a confusing day. And then it was the only day where we pretty much kind of ran out of food for the first time. We'd had no shops for a week. And that last day we were supplied by, you know, the little Robinson's sachets that you squirt into a drink. We had that vanilla essence and maybe 3 or 4 biscuits for a 10-12 hour hike over the Moffat Hills.
So you're running on empty at that point.
Oh, we were fumes, absolute fumes. Yeah. And then that excitement we used from the golden eagle nearly killed us.
Used all remaining energy.
Yeah, exactly. No, excitement. That was part of the, I think it's the Southern Uplands Golden Eagle Project and also Southern Scotland. And it was amazing to see them at lunch. It was
I hadn't realized that lunch was so meagre, to be fair.
At lunch, it was very cool.
Was it a good sighting? What were they?
Actually a banging sighting as well. Yeah. We had 2 or 3 that day. 2 or 3? Looking at Katie, she remember. Yeah, 2 or 3, something like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
On your lunch.
Very good views. So that was very, very nice.
And any other highlights bird-wise?
We kept a list. Yeah. I think we very, very close to 200, I think. The last bird we added to it was Sooty Shearwater.
Get in.
On the Stornoway to Ullapool Ferry. And we had Humpback and Finwhale on the ferry as well.
Yeah. Amazing.
So that was a very good last couple of days.
Awesome.
Yeah. Brilliant. 200, not bad at all. Just before we get on to your 5 birds, and we'll talk about those in a moment, but you worked for a stint on Chris Packham and Megan's 8 out of 10 bats as a presenter. How was that?
It was such an amazing experience. It was a great group of people. It was a really proper quality. Everyone knew what they were doing. Everyone was so passionate. Everyone was all on the same wavelength as well, which is really important. And Chris's ethics and equally everyone's of getting young people on the stage, things like that, and is so, so, so generous and not just there as a tick box, but there is value add to them as well.
Yeah.
It's not meaningless is what I'm trying to say. So everybody who was there was good at what they were doing and had a great time. So. But no, it was, I'll never forget that. Some very, very cool memories.
It got me through lockdown, I tell you.
It was amazing how professional it was, you know, and great seeing it. Just looked like a brilliant gang, you know. Everybody watching it just wanted to be in that gang because you all looked like you were having a great time.
Yeah. I really hope we're able to bring it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I hope so too, yeah. Second series. So we better get down to business. So anybody who's listened to this podcast before will know that the premise is that there is this impending environmental apocalypse that's going to decimate the world, and you have to choose 5 bird species to save from certain extinction. Mm-hmm. The 5 trinkets that you would grab from the burning fire as you run out. Mm-hmm. So your 5 species that mean the most to you. Mm-hmm. At the end of that, you choose one your absolute favorite, and anybody who knows indie might already know what that's going to be. But yeah, you choose your absolute favorite to join.
I'm going with Dunnock.
Oh yeah, that's not what you said when you were a guest on the podcast. Oh, you mean for indie?
Yeah.
Indie's definitely not picking Dunnock.
I'm just trying to throw the audience off.
Yeah, and then you have to choose one that's going to be your companion in the desolate wasteland.
I haven't chosen, actually.
You haven't?
I saw your eyes searching. This is good. This is live.
Will make me decide.
So, okay. Let's get started. Let's crack on with
bird number one.
So, bird number one.
Bird number one for me is the Manx Shearwater. Nice. Now, this is why I'm undecided, because I'm undecided by this one and my last bird to be like potentially my favourite. I mean, I'd still have a favourite. Anyway, we'll come to it. Manx Shearwaters, I did a 16,000 word assignment on them during college a couple of years ago. So like there was like a few bits at the time that like, oh, I thought I knew everything about these birds. But since reading since, it's like, oh, I missed like half of it. But watching them working in the Hebrides as a guide at the moment this summer, and they are just so amazing. So they do something called dynamic soaring, and it's essentially a corkscrew motion of flying. And it harnesses wind energy to use as little of their own energy as possible. So you see them, it's a bit like kind of like you see albatross fly. So
they're like mini albatross.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So it's those big arcs they do, and then they drop down using that energy they've gained from the wind. I can't remember if there's a name for it, but there's a small pocket of air just above the water surface that's really like not much friction in it. So they see them traveling really low to the water surface. You always think they're going to hit it, but they're such skilled, talented flyers, and they've got special pressure ducts in their ear to detect differences in air pressure. So they actively seek out larger weather systems to use the wind to assist them on longer foraging trips. And they're just so cool, just watching them do their thing. And on the Isle of Rum, on the west coast of Scotland, I think it's a third of the world population. There's 100,000 there. And nesting on the tall peaks up there, they're just absolutely magnificent. I really love to go see them nesting there one day. But yeah, they're just absolutely very, very, very cool.
Awesome. Talk about specialised bird. I mean, they know what they're doing, right?
And that's the thing. And they migrate all the way down to Argentina in the winter. And it's just like, try and get your head around that distance and then coming all the way back up for the breeding season. It's just an absolutely insane distance. But then to do that distance, you need to be efficiently flying, which is what they've absolutely nailed on.
And they go on massive foraging trips as well, like just like in a day.
Exactly. That's the thing. So like what I was researching was GPS tag birds from, I think it was a couple of islands in Wales and a couple of islands, Isle of Rum, west coast of Scotland. And there's a big plateau. Well, it's kind of the continental shelf, Rockall, far west of St Kilda. It's like another St Kilda distance again from the Outer Hebrides. And these birds, from what I understand, it seems like one adult goes out to do a longer trip, maybe 3, 4, 5 plus days, and then while the other adult keeps the chick ticking over doing local feeding trips. And then the adult that goes longer will always go with a tailwind to assist them on the way. But then it doesn't matter, regardless of what weather, they need to get back after a certain time. So they will happily go in, well, not necessarily happily, it's a question for them, but they will go back into wind on the return, so then they can relieve the other parent, and then they can have a couple of chill days while the other parent then goes through the longer trips. But that's the thing, the feeding trips, let alone the migration, is an immense distance. So it's mostly admiration I have for them what they do. It's very endurance.
I was just thinking cool. Then it's a bit like one of them goes to like Sainsbury's local and the other one does a big shop.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. That's such a good way to describe it. Exactly it.
The big shop. You're right. It is that, but they take a long, really long time. The big shop is a long way away.
That's
very true. I like that.
And the other thing that they're famous for is the weird crazy noises they make, isn't it? And I recently had Dawn Barmer on from the BTO, and it was one of her five birds, actually, which she talked a lot about the sort of breeding sites and the noises they make at night. And one of the stories that I read about in Mark Cocker's Birds Britannica book was that off the Isle of Man, historically, there is this story that Vikings in 1014, they anchored off the Calf of Man, and they heard this weird bedlam of screaming and wild howling. Mm. And these crazy sounds, and they imagined creatures like hostile night ravens, because they'd never heard it before.
Yeah.
And then this became legend, and the legend then went back to all the other Vikings that actually they were attacked and loads of them were killed by these Manx shearwaters or creepy night ravens or whatever
true.
It was. So that bit wasn't true. But my question to you is, we do that sometimes do this zero punches pulled question. Will?
Zero punches pulled.
Thank you. Hopefully it's a question that you've never been asked and may never be asked again. Okay. But if you were to be attacked by and killed horrifically by a flock of any species of bird, what species would you choose?
It is something I've dreamed about, for sure. Just to add to that, there's on the Isle of Rum where they nest, there's a peak on Rum called Trollval. And that was because, again, similar to your story, when Vikings first landed there, they believed it was trolls up in the hills. So it's actually called Trollval. So it's very cool. Pecked to death or killed to death. I feel like Gannet would be quite impressive. Do you know what I mean? Like diving in at 60 miles an hour, like speared through the head.
It would be swift death, I think.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It'd be pretty swift, I think.
Straight into the old noggin.
Straight into the noggin.
Yeah.
And I feel like the speeds they get up to, that wouldn't be a problem for them.
What a view.
I know,
exactly. Imagine them.
I would love to be close up to something like that. Maybe it'd be cool to live to tell the tale, and then maybe, you know, whatever follows happens. But I think that would be
Gannet. Good. Mm-hmm. What about you? I'd go with something cute, like long-tailed tits.
Get smothered by them.
Nice. Anyway, Manx shearwaters. We've had them on the podcast. I think this is maybe the third time. They're one of those. I think they're a birder's bird, aren't they? People do love them because for lots of different reasons. And they used to be harvested, very oily, used as currency in some parts of remote Scotland in the past as well.
St Kilda, I went out to St Kilda a couple of weeks ago, last week, and learning. I think it was the locals who used to live there used to take, I think, 20, it wasn't just Manxies, but it was 22,000 seabirds a year to eat. And it's just, I mean, that's just how it was. That's all they had. So it's just completely unfathomable way of life, what they did there. It's pretty extraordinary. I think I'll stick to watching them.
Right then.
Ready for
we'll crack on.
Else?
All right.
Bird number two. That was supposed to be a hoopoe. I think that came from his butt.
that RSPB bird was one of my children's when they were little, and it's maybe running out of batteries.
I think he needs a couple of Duracells.
So, tell us about bird number two.
Bird number two is a wren. Now, I've always had quite a soft spot for them. I remember where I used to live in Sheffield Forest, going out one morning, I always used to go on a walk before breakfast, just on my own, when I was 9, 10, whatever. I just used to go out with my binoculars, I just do a lap behind the house, through a field, through a bit of woodland. And I remember always used to see wrens. And then I remember one morning there was a nest box. I put up a load of nest boxes because we used to have tree sparrows there, but they sadly left because that's what they do. But one morning I went up just before sunrise in the winter, and I just saw this load of wrens just piling out of a box in the morning. And that was when I first learned about them communal roosting. And I just Googled about 5 minutes ago. I didn't realize. Any of you guys know what the record for the number of wrens in one box is?
No idea.
It's absolutely staggering. It was 63.
No.
In one box. It must have been a fairly sizable, maybe a starling box or something like that. But it's just it would just be so warm for them. It'd be so cozy. I don't blame them in the winter.
You wouldn't want to be at the bottom.
No.
I know they don't weigh much, but 62 wrens on top of you, mate.
That's probably a good weight after a while, isn't it? But no, they're just very sweet and so loud. That's one thing that slightly annoys me about them sometimes, is that when you're trying to have a conversation, they do kind of overpower. But nature deserves to. It's absolutely grand with me. So no, I just think they're very sweet.
They are loud for the sound. I often call them... Do you ever use this expression, eggy, as in being angry? But
nope.
Basically, I call them eggy wrens because they're just angry all the time.
Yeah.
They're just tick, tick, ticking at me.
Yeah.
And I'm just all right, I'm just having a little walk. But they come in and then they launch into the loudest song for a small bird. You know,
it's 100 decibels, I think.
Yeah.
It's something ridiculous.
They're
really
loud.
I think they got attitude.
They do.
I think the fact they kick off very readily is one of the reasons why they were hated, and the whole Wren Day tradition of killing the wrens because they gave up St. Stephen's hiding place when he was hiding in the bushes, and a wren was there going, "How man, nick off." And then they killed St. Stephen because of a wren.
Gosh.
I like the fact that the Latin name
I love that. Troglodytes.
Troglodytes. Isn't it Cave Dweller or something?
Cave Dweller, yeah. Yeah.
Cave Dweller. I am a troglodyte.
Cool. Have you heard the Viagra Boys song?
No.
Troglodyte. It's a bang. Anyway, sorry, that's just it's a really good song. The other thing I love about wrens is they build loads of nests.
Yeah.
Every year, don't they? And then they tour their lady around to see which one she likes
exactly.
the best.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I always find that funny when you see like a nest and you think, oh, that's probably in use. And I'm like, oh no, wait, it could be one of the four or five that this poor male's been building. One of the abandoned ones. I think that looks all right, but I haven't got the same eye as a female wren, so.
Yeah, I think it's a bit harsh on the wren because they've got this reputation as, you know, for being killed and giving up St. Stephen and all that, but actually, they're very romantic and...
Exactly, yeah.
They've got a...
All that effort.
Hell of a work ethic.
Yeah, I'd be impressed with that.
Yeah.
Hint. Yeah.
I'd definitely be a one-nest wren, which would be...
Yeah, true.
I wouldn't do so well, right? No. I'd be like, I'm done, I'm out.
That'll do, yeah.
I don't think we'd be sat today here today, actually, if it wasn't for the wren, because my very first foray into doing anything sort of like publicly with birds was a T-shirt of two overlapping wrens and called it Wren Diagram. Wren Diagram, yeah.
Wren Diagram.
And did that for charity and, yeah.
It's a good one.
Made raise some money and then I got other ideas after that. But, yeah. So, yeah, the humble wren. Everybody loves a wren. It's been on the podcast a few times before. What I'd read for the first time before today was that a wren carrying a sprig of laurel is said to have flown into the Roman Senate and warned Caesar of his impending assassination. Such a good job, to be fair, a bit like St. Stephen.
Yeah, so, he was too busy building a nest.
Yeah.
he didn't think about the actual words.
Build nests, don't be a messenger. Yeah.
There we go.
I think that's the point there. Right, that was bird number two, the humble wren. So let's crack on to
bird number three. Well, my, if that isn't an osprey.
It's a songfish.
Right.
Bird number three. My bird number three is, it's in my top five, definitely, hawfinch. And I just think they are ridiculously good looking birds, and to be fair, I feel like they could really beat you up, hawfinch. Yep. If they were like maybe twice the size, I honestly feel like, and if they had an attitude like wrens, I think we should be scared of them.
I wouldn't want to ring one.
I know someone who tried to ring one has literally taken a chunk out of his hand, and it's not me. But no, I just think they're very cool. I remember where I used to live in Sherwood, I remember seeing my first ever juvenile hawfinch, and that was like, I thought that was cool, but then I chatted to birders and they used to like essentially tell me that was really cool because they're so secretive during breeding season. So juveniles are like quite rarely seen, unless again in the right spot, which I just happen to be. They every single year, the 1st of July for 5 years, I had them every day on the trot. The 1st of July till the 17th, pretty much that window exactly, they would come bring the chicks in, are feeding in cherry trees in Sherwood Forest, and it was the sweetest thing. But I just love them because they just don't seem to like people. And if you try and get anywhere near them, they're just like, nope, that's not for us. And then they just go. And I just have a massive respect for that.
If you do get near them, they'll take a chunk out of you.
Exactly, they'll take a chunk out of you. So there's a reason we don't. I just think they're very, very, very cool birds. And also, like, it's great seeing them in the winter. They just bright up woodland canopies when you see them for 2 seconds as they're flying off.
Yeah.
But no, I just think they're very cool.
They are great. And they're great looking birds. I think that because they're our biggest finch, aren't they? They're really chunky. They're really colourful. They've got that black bib and a bit of an eye stripe going on. They're proper cool looking birds.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you get one of them in the bins, you're pretty happy.
Oh, right? Gosh. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're very, very cool.
Martin Hughes Games actually wrote about them for Into the Red. And he's also been on the wrong end of the beak.
Oh, really?
And I read that the force that can be exerted by a hawfinch's beak is, let's see if I can get this right, it's because they're only about 50, 60 grams in weight, but the force they can exert is 1,000 times their body weight, right? And so scaling that up, I did a calculation, and that would be equivalent to the force of 10 fairly obese elephants. Like,
really?
That's how strong that bite is and how they can crack into cherry stones.
Oh, wow.
And they're like, yeah, they're...
What a fact. That's good mine, fact. Sorry. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So there you go. Gosh. So, yeah. If I've done my maths right, which I think I have. But they are,
really hard to see in the summer, especially when the canopy, because they're right up the top, aren't they, the trees, they're high up in the canopy, and when there's leaves there, you just can't see them. They're really shy. Yeah. And did you also know that they've got the longest Latin name of any of our birds?
I had heard, I mean, I'm not going to try, but I had heard that.
But it's Cockathraustes, Cockathraustes. And if you chuck in the genus, it's a third Cockathraustes. Because cocko means kernel, and thrau means I break into pieces. In ancient Latin. So that there you go, yeah.
I won't be remembering that when I hit the bar later.
I remember the fact, but not the name.
So there you go, hawfinch. And thank you, because it's a brilliant bird, and it's one we've never had on the podcast.
Really?
Never.
That's disgusting.
Always I know.
That is unbelievable.
There's loads of birds we've never had on, and there's loads of birds we keep getting on, but you've picked two we've not had on, including your next one.
Bird number four. Cuckoo. We ran out of sound effects.
No more sound effects.
Bird number four for me is a shag. Firstly, great name. Secondly, I just think they're absolutely stunning. And so many puns I'm about to make.
I'm keeping absolutely straight face.
Right, straight face. I'm not looking that way. So shags, really lovely plumage. Great feeding habits. They can dive to at least 50 to 60 meters. Which I think is very cool. They look very elegant underwater. The main reason I love them is the iridescence on the feathers. Getting a good view of this bird is really quite cool. So hitting the feathers in the sun's the iridescence. I think, what is it to do with it? I can't remember. I'm not going to start on that. But just absolutely stunning. The blues, the sort of the greens, even a bit of red sometimes in the purple. Very, very gorgeous birds. And again, a good attitude. I've picked all birds with attitudes, haven't I? Apart from Mike Shearwater. So yeah. There's a theme. There's a theme. But no, I just think they're very, very cool, and they're always lovely to see. And also, whenever like we're doing walks on seabird islands, they're always the first to shout at you. When you're like even like on the track walking past the nest, they'll always just look at you, and you know, like, oh, if I stop here for another second, I'm gonna get told where to go, and rightly so. So very cool birds.
And if they look at you as well, they've got a mental emerald eye.
Amazing eyes. Yeah, amazing, gorgeous.
Probably cool.
Lovely green. Yeah.
And then, like, from a distance, they're almost like reptilian and snaky with their necks and stuff.
I remember seeing one silhouetted a couple of weeks ago, and it was like, that just looks so prehistoric.
Yeah.
Just so cool. So, no, yeah, very good point.
They're really cool, and we're running out of time, but we're going to keep going quickly. Yeah, so another one of those birds that was shot for sport and eaten, not particularly tasty. And to have to eat them, Thomas Buick said, they had to be skinned, drawn, wrapped in cloth, and buried in the ground for some time before they were deemed edible, because they were so fishy and horrible. Wow. So they did all that to them to eat them.
Not a bit of hummus? A bit of hummus with it?
Dirty shags.
And I think they're one of those birds that you see on innuendo-based T-shirts that obviously we're far more mature than that.
But I've got a jumper in my tent with shag on it.
But it is an unfortunate name and an unfortunate innuendo, but it was put to good use by, I don't know if you know this, by the Shetland Youth Information Service in 2002 when they unleashed Scarfy the Safe Shag, who was on the locals. Scarfy, which is an old ancient name in Scotland for the shag, was a 7 foot tall shag, somebody in a shag costume in a hard hat and steel toe capped boots, who went round the towns promoting safe sex.
Wonderful.
Well, there you go.
There you go. So the name came into good use.
To very good use. That's very good.
Anyway, moving swiftly on from the shag to
bird number five. All right, this is a European bird. Anyone guess this?
Golden Oriole?
Golden Oriole.
Oh,
I thought that was quite good.
That's good. I do
that
like
wasn't
that.
Bad.
Come on, then. Do that. Goshawk. Thankfully, we don't need much time to explain it, because all I need to say is goshawks are the best. They just kill everything. There's nothing. There's very few things they lay their eyes on that I couldn't take that down. And again, a very good attitude. I was very lucky to have them roosting behind my house.
Really?
Back in Sherwood. And they just look gorgeous. Like when the youngsters, they start off with quite a pale eye, and then as they get older, the eye gradually turns yellow and then orange, and maybe even a deeper red if they get old enough. And it just looks so piercing. And again, they're one of those birds that, like, not interested in us. And, you know, does a good number on squirrels, pheasants, and with pigeons and all sorts of stuff. And they are, just a very good top of the food chain predator. And yeah, they just look so cool. And they're so quick, so agile. They are, yeah, they're just epic beasts.
They really are. Cool. I mean, they're my second favorite bird.
Really?
Ever since I was a kid, you know, peregrine was always number one. I had got a soft spot for the peregrine, obviously, but goshawks and Will and I went down to the Forest of Dean, didn't we?
Yeah, see your mate, and Gareth.
Did you ring with him?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
man.
It's amazing. The smell of them.
Oh, so when you talked about the eye color, then they were blue at that point, was that
right? Even paler. Yeah, paler than that.
So pretty, but even then, you know they're killers.
Oh, you just know this little fireball is just going to soon just explode and just like, oh, yeah. Amazing birds.
They are amazing. Cool. And we could talk about them forever, but we don't have. We've only got 1 minute left. So, Indy, as I mentioned earlier, the final premise of the podcast is you have to choose one of these five species, the bird that is your absolute favorite that will sit on your shoulder and accompany you through the desolate wasteland, me with my peregrine, Will with his golden oriole or bobolink.
Maybe a hobby,
yeah.
Hobby,
maybe.
Yeah. Mm.
So what's it going to be? Which of those five?
I think I'm going to... Wren. I'm going to go for the Wren predator. The Manx shearwater. I think I'll stick with goshawks just because of literally, I remember doing my GCSEs and like being, as everyone would be, so stressed out about it. And I remember I used to go up to that barn every single evening and it's like, oh, I've had a crap day. I'm just going to go watch goshawks. And every day they would always show up for me and just put a smile on my face endlessly. Yeah. And I owe them a hell of a lot. So, wow. Yeah, a thank you to the goshawks and keep getting those greys, squirrels.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Indy.
Thanks
to Oscar for doing the sound, and thanks to the hordes of people that have been watching us this afternoon. Yeah.
Thank you.
Right, let's trash this.
Thank you, guys. That was lovely.
Well, folks, hope you enjoyed that episode of Golden Grenades Live for the very first time.
I'm still getting over the crowd, absolutely, as far as the eye could see.
But it was great fun, and Indy was a fantastic guest.
Yeah, he was awesome.
He was great. And it helped us keep the time, having 30 minutes, rather than me rambling on too much. So that was a winner.
But now it's time to head home, right?
Yeah, we're just walking past the loos, actually, just for that festival vibe.
Number one or number two?
So that's it. We're almost wrapped up. It's Sunday now, and we've just packed away the tent and getting ready to leave. We've got one last talk to go to, which is
gonna see those Springwatch dudes to chat about Springwatch.
Yeah, so that's what we're gonna do now, and then we'll be off until next year. So hope you enjoyed the episode, and
see you next time.
Doodle pip.
Sandwich cone and little kinds of turns. There's a lot of turns.